the show that's focused on investing strategies for today's needs and tomorrow's goals. This is Bucket Strategy Investing, presented by the Wealth Advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Now, here are Johnny Dean and Rick the Professor Plum.
Hey, there's two and there's an extra one. Welcome. We're back with another top-notch edition of the Bucket Strategy Investing Show live again today. Our aim is to help you make better money moves. And now, I said this, we brought Professor Rick Plum back for this hour's strategy session. Now, Rick will be answering some of your questions as usual. We've got strategy to talk about. But beyond that today, we are graced with the presence of... blessed, graced, Chris Lloyd... who is here with us from the Phoenix, Scottsdale area of the Lucia Capital Group offices. We have offices all around the country, and anytime we have Chris Lloyd here, we have a we ask you nicely if you don't mind coming on.
Always glad to be here, John.
Well, we're happy that you're here. He's a chartered financial consultant. He's a certified financial planner, MBA. There could be other things, too, but that's all I got time to mention. Anyway, Chris is going to be talking with us today with both me and Professor Plum. There, since Chris works in the Phoenix office, he sees a lot that has to do with annuities. Now, we've known that annuity sales happen a lot more. They're a lot more prevalent in the Phoenix area, I'm guessing, because there are a lot of retired folks down there.
Sure.
And that sort of goes hand in hand, you might expect. But there are some new tactics that are being employed by people. He's going to tell us all about this in just a couple of moments. Now, I want to remind you, you've got a question for the Brain Trust. I mean, look at the power we have in the studio now. We are at full throttle here, folks. You will not find a question that you can get past the Brain Trust right now. All you got to do is give us a call. 877-PLANNER. How's that? How's that, huh? Did I hype you up? 877-752-6637. We got most of the lines open right now. Emails, you want to get those to us at wealthed.com. That's at the Find Your Answer link. We'll try to get to some of those this hour. If we don't have time, then that's fine. We can do them next hour. Professor Plum and Chris Lloyd, here again, courtesy of the advisors at Lucia Capital Group. I want to remind you to take our advice. You need a bucket strategy. You need one that's tailored specifically to meet your goals and your needs. And you need to talk to somebody who understands your individual situation. Do you need this product? Do you need that product? Does this fit into your goals? Well, you find out. You call the professor, you call Chris Lloyd, or anyone at Lucia Capital Group at this off-air number, 800-644-1150. You meet with an advisor, you get your strategy all squared away. Everyone's situation is different, so of course, everyone's strategy is naturally different. Again, the number to reach these Brain Trust members off the air, 800-644-1150.
Can I get you some oxygen?
What, because I'm a happy guy?
You were going there for me. Take a breath for about 4 minutes.
I don't need to take breaths, you know. I've got a couple of members here. This is Professor Plum and, as I said, Chris Lloyd. He's a chartered financial consultant, certified financial planner, MBA, et cetera, et cetera. But, Chris, since we have you on, and I don't, you know, we have a limited amount of time with you, I'm just going to get right into it here. You work in the Phoenix office, as I said. You see a lot of things being pitched in the area.
Heavily pitched.
Yeah, and I'm not
inappropriately pitched.
Well,
in
that's
many
the
cases.
Thing. I don't want to create a situation here where we're talking about annuities and saying, who would ever buy an annuity? Because the problem, Chris, is not with the product; it's how it's being pitched. Right?
Sure. That's always the consideration. Right? Is when you look at all these complaints that are out there against annuity companies and such. When you look at those, it's not that the product was bad.
Right.
It's necessarily the expectation and the explanation that was done between the representative and the potential customer. Now, in this case, what I was telling Rick about a little bit yesterday is there's been a flurry of activity in the area of estate planning. Now, everybody at this table has talked a lot about the benefits of estate planning and how important it is. You know, you got to get out there and get your estate planning documents in order. That's really important stuff. And so we promote going out and working with an attorney to get your estate planning documents in place. Now, people listening to us, they want to do that. They want to get it right. So they go to an attorney and they find out, ooh, having that trust document and other documents might cost about $3,000.
Sure.
And so that's a problem potentially. And so they say, boy, I wish I could do that cheaper. And there are document preparers out there, right? And these are services, there are national services, local services that are in the business of preparing these legal documents. They're not attorneys.
They have certified document preparers or planners or whatever you want to say?
Absolutely.
Providers?
Certified, registered. Every state uses a little different titling of that.
Okay.
But there are actual document preparers. That's a thing, right, where they use templates to take your information and your answers to questions and create documents from that.
Those online services are just that, too.
That's exactly right. The online services we've heard over the years are just that same kind of thing, and they try to make it clear most of them, the legitimate ones, try to make it clear, hey, we're not attorneys, we're not giving legal advice, we just prepare documents based on your information, right? So recently there's been a flurry of activity where people have come to me and they've said, hey, I've gone to see one of those document preparers, and instead I got my documents, and that part might be okay, but I also got introduced to the guy in the next room, so to speak.
Whoa, wait a minute. What do you mean? They went so first they went to an attorney and they said,
not an attorney.
No, no, okay, yeah. First they went to an attorney and said, oh, well, $3,000. Whoa, okay. They go to a document preparer who says, hey, I can get you this stuff, and we could do it for maybe a fraction of the cost.
Right, right. And that could be perfectly legitimate. There are legitimate document preparers out there. But what's happening next is that document preparer situation becomes an annuity sales pitch.
So what do they tell these people when they're in the office?
Yeah, so this guy in the other room, in many cases, as it's been described to me, I'm not trying to make that sound more cloak and dagger than it is. That's the way people convey it to me, right? He has looked at through their assets, the assets that were given to them for estate planning purposes, right? He's gone through that, and he's identified these risky assets, whether that's a old variable annuity or whether that's a managed portfolio or mutual funds, and he's saying, you know, you said preserving your assets for your heirs is important to you, and all this stuff's really risky, so let's move it over here to a fixed indexed annuity to try to preserve those assets. It's going to be much better, and then they get into all the normal fixed indexed annuity characterizations and sometimes mischaracterizations, if you will, that we've talked about.
Isn't there some kind of a breach of some kind of confidentiality agreement? If I'm working with an attorney, I would not expect that attorney to share my personal information with somebody who's not an attorney or not working for their firm on the behalf of my legal representation, not an annuity salesperson. Just like I wouldn't expect, you know, I wouldn't expect a CPA or a tax preparer that I go to provide that information to somebody else to take a look at it without my knowledge.
Right.
Isn't there some kind of a breach there?
Potentially. I mean, obviously that's one of the issues, and that's the first red flag that usually goes up for these consumers who have come to see us, is they've said, you know, I just didn't feel good about, whether there's a legal breach or not, I can't answer.
I'm
not an attorney.
We're not going to offer that kind of advice here.
But that's the red flag that made them go, you know, I went to him for this information, I provided my information for that purpose, and all of a sudden now we're having a whole different conversation and they're trying to sell me something.
Yeah, so I came into you for this person, whatever, I came into them for document preparation, and that's all I'm paying for. Right. And this guy or whoever is showing it to somebody in the next office and who said, hey, I just happened to look at your stuff and boy, you got some risky. Why don't we put you into something else? So that's the lure.
Right.
They got them into the office. They got them in because it's they're you know, 1/10 of the cost of an attorney, which may be fine.
Right.
But then they say, oh, and by the way, I've got something else for you.
Right. And another problem we're potentially seeing here is, you know, when you talk about replacing securities, and when you talk about replacing variable products, and you give advice related to those products in order to switch it over to a fixed product, you're supposed to be securities licensed in that process. You're supposed to be an investment advisor representative or a registered representative. Unfortunately, when we look these folks up, sitting there across from the consumer, when we look these folks up in FINRA and the SEC websites, what we find is they're not. They are simply licensed as fixed insurance salespeople.
So if you go to them and say, I've got this $100,000, tell me what I can do with it, they can present a fixed index or a fixed product to you. But they're not supposed to say, you need to sell these types of assets, which are securities by nature, because that's outside of their scope of expertise, because they're not licensed to give that kind of information. Whether, you know, whether you want to do it or not, they're not allowed to give that kind of information.
That's exactly right. A lot of states have been clarifying that in recent years. They've been really focusing in on that and warning people, don't do that, and which has caused a lot of fixed insurance guys to go get associated with an investment advisor representative, which is a whole other discussion. But that's the reason that they do that, is because they're not supposed to have that conversation. And it can get even worse because, you know, the client's a little dizzy from these meetings because now they haven't just met with the document preparer person. They met with a few other people as well.
Who happened to wander in from other offices and say, I got something for you.
Right. And so they've had all these conversations, one about legal questions, perhaps without a license, one about securities, perhaps without the right licensing. And then in some cases, the people who are talking about, hey, buy this fixed indexed annuity, and continuing those discussions, they're not even fixed insurance licensed.
Really?
Absolutely. So in one case I saw, they go, oh, well, we talked to Joe about buying this annuity and how important it was for us. But Joe put Fred's name on the illustration because Fred's fixed insurance license.
Wow. And you're seeing this.
Absolutely.
So they're coming in and they're coming into you and they're saying, you know, what they're saying, is this something I need to have? What's going on here?
That's exactly right. So they, you know, we oftentimes tell people if you're looking at any investment decisions or any annuity decisions in this case, then come see us for a second opinion. Come talk to us and we'll give you our analysis, tell you the pros and cons and help you understand what it is you're looking at, right?
Yeah.
And so people are taking us up on that offer. Basically, they're saying, okay, well, here's what happened. Chris, what do you think? What's the situation?
877-PLANNER, Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, and Chris Lloyd joins us for at least another segment or so, talking to you about different aspects of planning. I got a few more questions for Chris. If you have it for the Brain Trust, we can answer those questions right here on the air. 877-PLA-NNER, Bucket Strategy Investing, Full Throttle Brain Trust. Back in just a moment. There you go. Bucket Strategy Investing. Johnny Dean, the Brain Trust, today consisting of Professor Rick Plum, and for at least another segment or so, maybe more, we'll see, Chris Lloyd, Chartered Financial Consultant, Certified Financial Planner, et cetera, works out of the Phoenix office. He happens to be in town with us today, and so I grabbed him right out of the hallway and said, guess what, you're coming on the show. No, he readily agreed. And I thank you for coming on, Chris, because you do provide, you're out in the field, we are too, but you're out in the field, a different field than what we normally see every day. Now, we were talking about annuities before the break, and you had talked a little bit about some of the sales techniques to get people into the office.
Right.
A lot of it rather unscrupulous, in my opinion, but we'll leave it at that. Now, when we're talking about sales techniques for, say, annuities, you're seeing a whole lot of different things being pitched, aren't you?
Yeah, and have over the years. I think you made the point that just because we're talking about a particular product type and saying that the presentation isn't accurate or there's misinformation, mm-hmm. doesn't mean we don't like that product type. You know, on fixed indexed annuities, it seems like I'm picking on those all the time. I'm not really. I've dealt with them since the mid-90s when they're invented. In fact, that's how Rick and I met originally.
Way back when, yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And
you were at that annuity party everybody was. Yeah.
Right, everybody exactly. The big rage back. The annuity party. All the nerds were there.
They were, yes.
Wait a minute.
So there's nothing wrong with the product per se. It's about how it's presented. What are the pros and cons and potential misrepresentations there? And so, for example, in the fixed indexed world, a big pitch that I hear all the time is, why would you ever buy a variable annuity with a guaranteed withdrawal benefit rider when you can, because they're so expensive, right?
Right.
And when you can buy a fixed index product with a guaranteed withdrawal benefit rider because they're so cheap. So they say, oh, variable, high risk, high fee, don't ever do it. You'd be stupid if you do it. They ultimately say, you'd be stupid if you did it, right, versus fixed index. Well, it's not an apples to apples comparison. And so when you look at these things, my comment to you would be, they're both expensive when you're talking about lifetime income.
Both the fixed index and the variable.
That's exactly right.
Well, we know variable. I mean, we've seen the fees that are associated with those, sure.
Right, and that's the big difference is how do they communicate those fees? So a variable annuity is sold by prospectus, and they're required to itemize those fees. So it's very obvious what those expenses are, and you can point to them, and there's other disclosure forms that are there that itemize those as well. So it's easy to know. Absolutely, variable annuities will guarantee withdrawal benefits somewhere between the 3 to 4% range in terms of expenses, right? Now, on the fixed index, it's a little different. So the rider fee, or the fee that most people point to, is just the rider fee. And they go, oh, look, that's less than 1%. So, oh, what do you want, John? Less than 1% or 3 or 4?
Well, gee, you know, if I'm paying fees, I'd like it to be as low as possible. So less than 1% is the one for me.
Right. Except a lot of things, right? Number one, on the fixed index products, what do you have to know about those? They don't include dividends in the calculations, right? So if you're looking at the S&P 500, which is the most common index, although there's others that are trending mm-hmm. upward these days, the dividends are around 2%. So that's an expense in a way, right? That's a cost.
You're not getting 2% that somebody else might.
That's exactly right. So variable annuities include dividends. Fixed index annuities do not.
So there's 2% off the top, if you want to call it that.
Give or take. It's not.
I understand.
Just know that that's there, right? Now, recently, the big trend has been, hey, don't buy a capped fixed indexed annuity, because that's the other expense you could point to is, traditionally, because fixed index annuities provide some downside protection, they also provide some upside limitations, right? Through one way or another, and the traditional way, most common way, is the cap, right? And so that's another cost that you have to consider when you're looking at these things. Now, these uncapped products that are out there, they typically use a spread calculation. Now, I like that because it's a little easier for people to point to that and know what the spread is. And the common spread is about 1.5%. So now you can say, okay, well, on the fixed index product, I've got the 0.85% or so rider fee, right? I've got the 1.5% spread as it exists today, right? And I don't have dividends included. So now all of a sudden, these are starting to look a little more balanced in terms of their cost,
so
right?
So the fees are, I don't want to say they're the same. They're not necessarily, but they're similar in the sense that, but one is obvious because it has to be itemized out. Here are the fees that are incurred in this particular product, variable annuity in this case. The other one, they're in there, but you really got to know where to look.
You have to do a little bit of reading. You have to think about it.
Yeah.
And here's the really exciting part about the spreads is there's usually a little bitty asterisk right next to it. And that asterisk leads to a footnote that's in, as one radio guy out there says, mouse print. So really, really small print. And it tells you how high that spread can go. And so in some products, I've seen, hey, the current spread is 1.5%. But it can be up to 13.5%.
Explain what you mean. You say spread. I think a lot of people aren't sure what you mean when you say that.
I appreciate that. So, generally in an index product, they look at the index, and they look at it at when you purchase it, and they look at it a year or sometimes two later, right?
Point to point.
So point to point. Mm-hmm. And they say, all right, this is what the index earned, and from that we will subtract a spread. So it's essentially an expense, right? Mm-hmm. And you get the difference. Right, that's the most simple version of that calculation. Rick would be quick to say, but there's a lot of other moving parts.
Well, no, but you're right. I mean, so if the number at the beginning of the period, if it goes up 10% over that measuring period, you would think, okay, that's a 10% increase. If the spread's 1.5, potentially I'll get 8.5. That's
okay.
The spread takes away from whatever that return is.
Right.
The point I was just making is that spread can be changed by the insurance company after the first year, typically, right? And it can be as high as whatever they allow it to be. So in that one example, a very common product out there, the spread can go from 1.5% in the first year when you buy it to 13.5% the next year and can stay at 13.5%, which could wipe out, obviously, all of the gains that are in there, right? Sometimes there is no cap to that spread. Sometimes it's 1.5% now, and the insurance company can change it to whatever they want.
And you're kind of locked into that product.
You are. So usually
for the surrender period.
Well, right. Of course, that's what I mean. Yeah.
Usually the surrender period on these that we're seeing are 10 to 12 years.
Wow.
10 to 12 year indexes are just, they're not working in your favor. I mean, if you've got to go out 10 to 12 years, I've seen them as long as 14 and 15 year time horizons for surrender periods. That's just not appropriate.
And if you're buying it on the premise of the guaranteed withdrawal benefit and that guaranteed withdrawal benefit base, which uses the roll-up values and all the thing, which is a much higher number, that's the sizzle that attracts you as an investor to this.
Sure.
Then you're really not even just buying it for the purpose of a 10 to 12-year holding period for the surrender charge. You may be buying it to hold it for the rest of your life, right? 20 to 30 years, because you're buying it for the lifetime income rider. So the question is, what is my potential internal rate of return on that asset over the next 20
the
to 30 years of my life?
And oftentimes when you do the math, not every time, but sometimes when you do the math, it doesn't always work in your favor.
As an investment return, you're not getting stock market type investment returns out of it, which is what they're selling
it
as. You're getting a lesser investment return, but you're getting that guaranteed income. And if you don't need that guaranteed income, there's absolutely no reason to buy one of these guaranteed income products.
No, and I've said too before, if all I care about is guaranteed income, frankly, whatever. Buy
the one which gives you the best guarantee.
Exactly. And if it's 3% that I'm getting over the next 35 years and I could have done better in the stock market, hey, so be it.
That's exactly right. Which is perfectly valid.
Sure.
If you have longevity and you're trying to deal with that risk, lifetime income annuities are one of the best ways to do that. There's no doubt about that. They provide guarantees that neither Rick nor I or anybody else can provide, right?
We got to take a quick break. I have an email. Can you just hang out for a few more minutes?
Sure.
You all right?
Sure.
Okay. All right. What's he going to do? Say no, I got to go. You know,
it's
a Johnny Carson.
Help.
You know, where Dean Martin had to get up and go in the middle of, leave in the middle of the segment. I've trapped you, but okay. Chris Lloyd joins us with Professor Rick Plum. Just a couple more things on this stuff. If you have questions on any of this, 877-PLANNER. I know we're kind of doing a discussion here, but you're welcome to call. Questions on annuities, retirement, whatever. Give us a call. Lines are open. 877-PLA-NNER. Johnny Dean and the Brain Trust coming right back on Bucket Strategy Investors. Bucket Strategy Investing. Happy to have not just Professor Rick Plum here. I'm Johnny Dean, but along with Professor Rick Plum, Chris Lloyd, who's here from the Phoenix area, and we do, as I said, try to get him into the studio as often as we can to talk about different aspects of financial planning. And Chris can bring us a different perspective, which is always nice to have oftentimes. 877-PLANNER, if you've got money questions, we got lines open. Any question at all, does not have to be on annuities. It could be on Social Security, retirement, insurance, whatever. We've got it covered for you. But I wanted to get to Brad's email in McKinney, Texas, who is asking something sort of like what we're talking about. And by the way, we're going to explain in just a little bit when we say things like these roll-up features and income base, we will explain what we're talking about in just a second. But Chris, let's get your take on this, and Professor Plum. from Brad, how is one to know how to objectively compare two indexed annuities? Two different advisors say their annuity choice is superior based on higher potential return. Do you want the names of them, or do you
it goes along and gives the names. We're not going to tell the names. Both the contracts he references are 10-year surrender periods. Both are what are known as what have been marketed as hybrid annuities with an income base. And so they do have an automatic guaranteed withdrawal benefit to them. They have a little bit different way of calculating the roll-up and the step-ups and things of that nature. I want to first talk to Chris about, it says that he has superior returns.
This is what Brad is telling
us. Does one index annuity really have superior returns over another index annuity?
No, you have to recognize the insurance company is working with the same pool of money, whether they're designing product A or product B. And so the reality is neither product likely has a much higher chance of earning a lot more money than the other. Now, I would say this, the key to that, or the best indicator for that I know of, is to look at those moving parts we were talking about earlier.
Right.
So look for that footnote on a cap or a spread and see whether or not that can be changed by the insurance company and see whether or not there's any limits to those changes. But that's the most important thing you can do to protect yourself is understand those moving parts. Now, recognize with both of these, they're fixed indexed annuities. The reason fixed is in the name is because they are a subset of fixed annuities. There are really only two types of annuities, fixed and variable, and then there are subsets within that.
Right.
Well, fixed indexed are a type of fixed annuity.
So we're working under the same constraints. You only have a certain amount of Play-Doh here, right? And you're just going to shape it a little bit differently to make it more attractive.
Right. And the likely potential return over the long term in these things may be somewhere in the range of 2-4%, and I'm being generous on the 4% side.
Now, a lot of people are getting confused between the likely potential return of the cash value, which is what you're talking about, and the likely, or at least what they purport to be, the return of the income base, which is a completely different animal and isn't actually a real rate of return. It's a number that you then use to determine how much income you can draw out of your own cash value at some point in the future for the rest of your life. And so people will, especially salespeople, will get you to focus on these increases, these roll-ups, these step-ups, the different things that go on. And they all end up basically they try to mask the fact that they're giving you the same income that everybody else is giving you.
Right, and you know, in Arizona, because we do run into it so much, you know, it's funny because consumers have learned from us on the air that when you hear a 6% guaranteed return, and you understand that we're in a less than 2% 10-year treasury world.
Flags should go up,
right? But nevertheless, we continue to hear those pitches on the radio and other places out there from insurance agents who are trying to sell these.
Yeah. Now we're going to explain what you're talking about here in just a second. As far, and that's a great point to make, as far as Brad's email is concerned, is there a way to really answer this question?
Compare two different annuities?
I think you start by looking at the surrender charge period. I think you start looking at caps, spreads, participation rates, whatever the limiting factors are. I think you have to understand which of those can change by mm-hmm. the insurance company.
Yep.
Those are the biggest things you look at, the underlying index being used, whether it's a pure stock index like the S&P or whether or not it's a blended index.
Multi-asset. That's what they're calling it now, a multi-asset blended index. And that, by its very nature, is going to bring down your potential overall return. Now, one thing you can do maybe is ask the insurance company to provide you with historical renewal rates on the, if there's a cap, the spread, the whatever the, you know, the moving parts are. See what they were the first year and see what those rates were the following years. If the company has tried to keep it fairly, you know, the same number for all those years, that I would look at as a little bit stronger indicator that I like that particular product than one that starts off at one number and comes down dramatically through the rest of the surrender charge period. So look at the historical. Some companies will not give you the historicals. Geez, I wonder why.
Right.
I think maybe there's something in those that maybe they don't want you to see. So look at companies and look for their historical, you know, whatever the factor is, the spread rate, the cap rate, the participation rate. See what has happened in renewal years where you have a surrender charge and you can't get out, where they control your money. And if they control it in their favor, maybe that's not a good one to deal with.
Yeah. Now, Chris Lloyd, you've seen this. You've been with insurance companies where you've seen them, how they work, right?
Sure. Sure. Well, you know, at the end of the day, the way an insurance company makes money is they gather your assets and they hold them for a long period of time, the surrender charge period and potentially more, right? And they make more on your money than they're paying out to you. That's how they do it,
right? Of course.
And so the reason those moving parts are so important is because once they've got your money by attracting you with an attractive spread or an attractive roll-up rate or bonus or something mm-hmm. like that, then after that first year or so, once they can change that, they don't have any incentive to keep paying you at an attractive rate.
No.
They can crank up those spreads, reduce those caps, et cetera, and reduce your potential return. So that's why the moving part piece is so important.
Yeah, okay, so now, one of the things that you mentioned, and we've seen this advertised, 6%. And it makes it look like a rate of return. I don't know whether insurance companies are saying 6% rate of return. I don't know that they would or could. Maybe they do.
They say 6% increase is what I've seen.
Okay,
increase
so
or growth?
Explain uh-huh. this. We've talked about this before, Professor Plum. Chris, I want you to sort of explain it for folks that don't quite understand what this means, why this isn't a 6% rate of return that you're going to get as advertised on, you know, in an annuity product.
Right. So if I could draw, I'd draw you a picture, John, and I'd say, okay, so let's say you give $100,000 to an insurance company to put inside of an annuity with a guaranteed withdrawal benefit. So that's the premium you put in there, right? Mm-hmm. Now, that same $100,000 goes into another column, which is the account value. That's what we've been talking about here, how the interest is actually credited to the account, right? Mm-hmm. Then there's another column, which is the income base. And this is the number that the actuaries are going to use to determine how much income they have to pay you at a future date. This is the guaranteed income provision, right? And this is the part they make look really attractive. So there are high roll-up rates. There are usually bonuses on these types of things. And so that number will oftentimes, by a wide margin in most cases, outperform the actual crediting to the account value.
Well, sure.
So you may be earning that 2 to 3% we're talking about
on the cash
account,
value.
On the actual
that's
account
That's the actual
value.
Money you have.
Right, the real money, and that's what I call it, the real money column. But in this income-based column, you may be earning 6, 7%. Now, the reason it's not a real return is because at the end of the surrender charge period, you can't say to the insurance company, give me that income base.
No, yeah. My income base says I have, you know, $200,000 out of my $100,000 or $230,000.
And the cash, the real money only shows like $140,000.
Right.
So they'll say, well, the $140,000 is yours, but the $220,000 or whatever it is, no.
Correct.
That's not an actual real number.
So you have to take that income base over time. Yeah. Right, and so now it's not a return, that 6%. It's now spread over the entire time, your lifetime, that you're getting the income. So literally what I do when I analyze these things, and I'm not suggesting Brad do this, but I have a spreadsheet that I use where I actually put in the provisions of this actual product and what the income guarantees are, and I let the spreadsheet calculate for me the actual internal rate of return over the entire life of the product, assuming a certain life expectancy. And I go, okay, what's that number? And oftentimes the number is somewhere around 2 to 3%, right? And then I do that to compare different products and their income guarantees. And that's how you cut through all the moving parts of, oh, this one's got a 10% bonus, this one's got a 15% bonus, this one's got a 20% bonus. And what I tell people in the Arizona market, because we do see this all the time, is,
yes,
look, come see us for a second opinion. Bring in the information you've gotten from whoever has tried to sell you this annuity, and we'll sit down and we'll go over it with you. I know our other advisors here in San Diego will do that. He happens to be in Texas, so we've got some places in Texas we work. And so come in, see us. We'll analyze it with you. We'll help you understand that. We'll walk you through the product using the materials that you have.
Right.
Right, so you know we're not making it up. Right. And if you're satisfied with what you're looking at, if it works the way you understood it, then that's great.
And that's the thing. That's the whole point. Does this work for your goals?
Right.
I had said before, maybe you don't care. Maybe over 35 years and you find it's a 2.5-3% rate of return, but you don't care. Guess what? You've had the income. You've been guaranteed X number of dollars no matter how long you live. Then it could be a fine product.
And that's perfectly legitimate. Obviously, one of the big challenges in retirement income planning is managing longevity risk, right? And yeah. So if you have fears of outliving your money, it may make sense for a portion of your portfolio to go into a lifetime income annuity of some type, whether that be a boring old fixed immediate annuity, whether it be a fixed index with a guaranteed withdrawal benefit or a variable with a guaranteed withdrawal benefit, and a qualified advisor, CFP, CHFC, any of those kinds of things, not necessarily me, anybody
MBA.
Out there. Right, MBA, right. It's from the Scottsdale office. No.
There you go. You need to have somebody look at it. We're out of time for this segment. We will talk more. Chris Lloyd, thanks for joining
us.
I know I kept you overtime, but I do appreciate. Always good to hear from Chris. He's a wealth of knowledge, as Professor Plum has told you, even when he's not here. You can reach him at 800-644-1150 in the Phoenix office. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum. Hey, 877-PLANNER is our number. We're coming back with more right after this. Market strategy investing. Got lines open right now, 877-PLANNER. My thanks once again to Chris Lloyd. I hope you heard that or saw and heard it. Chris Lloyd, who joined us for the last few segments since the top of the hour, really, talking. He's from the Phoenix office at Lucia Capital Group, talking to us a little bit about some of the things that he sees in his area, which is the Phoenix Scottsdale area. And and it's not just there where we see a lot of these
we see
annuity
in Florida.
Pitches. We see it, yeah. It seems to be wherever retirees are more prevalent.
But that's where a heavy marketing amount is. But in all the areas where index annuities, safer investing, they mask the terms where they're trying to sell you these index annuities, especially with the guaranteed lifetime income benefits. And there's nothing wrong with the product. What's wrong with what they're doing is the way they sell it and creating expectations that are just not real. And unfortunately, yeah. Those expectations have led to some currently very large class action suits, which we won't get into. But it's just a matter of you need to read the contract. Now, fixed indexed annuities are not sold by prospectus. So you don't get all the information up ahead where you can go through the legalese and go through all the formulas and everything. They're sold by contract. They're sold by a marketing piece, and then you get the contract. And you have a period of time, depending on the state, 10 to 30 days, to read the contract and turn it back in and get all your money back without any type of surrender issue. Read the contract. Look at the crediting methods. Work through some hypothetical crediting methods. Use last year's return, 2013 return, 2008 returns, things of that nature, and say, if I had been in it during those period of time, what would I have actually received based on this crediting method? Unfortunately, it is math, and it is a formula. And so if you are uncomfortable working through the math, have somebody that can help you work through it and say, okay, the market did X, what would I have received as an income payment, interest payment, I should say, on my real money, as Chris calls it, the cash value, the money I could actually get out of it at some point on my own without having to create these lifetime incomes? What am I actually getting credited? And see what happens. I've seen it where sometimes they show very well. Then you say, look, well, I would have done, okay, the market did 10 and I got 6. Okay, that's not so bad. I've also seen it in years like 2013 where the market was up tremendously for much more than average, and many of these index annuities were only crediting 2, 3, 4% interest. That's not market-like, but it is exactly what the contract said it would be. So like anything else, just understand and don't, what is it, trust but verify.
Yeah. Well, the way you verify, honestly, I think what you got to do is you got to bring it into an advisor. I mean, we do this for a living. We do this all the time. Chris does this on a daily basis. It's always a good idea before you You know, walk into the office. You walk into somebody's office for one thing, and all of a sudden you get contracts in front of you, and you don't even know necessarily what it is you're doing. Take it with you. Take it home. Have the advisor explain it. Make sure you understand exactly what it is you're getting. And oftentimes, that explanation doesn't really work with somebody's goals. I'm not saying it does every time, but make sure that it works with your goals. Because if your goal, Professor Plum, if your goal is to have a good rate of return over the next 20 years, and you don't need any income.
Well, then you should not buy a product that charges you to provide an income.
Right. Yeah.
And
you may or may not know that you have that. You know, or on the other hand, if all you want is income, guaranteed income, and you don't care so much about interest rates or rate of return, that if the income that you're being provided today by this particular product is going to work for you for the rest of your life, then, you know, why allow a company to hold on to your money and try to earn a bigger rate of return when you don't need it?
Right. And earlier in the show, we had an email from Brad McKinney, Texas, asking how to evaluate one income annuity versus another income annuity. Look at the worst case scenario. Look at what the income. If you're looking at an income annuity, it tells me you want the income. If you want the income, look at the worst case scenario. If you're going to leave it alone for 5 years and then turn it on, 10 years, turn it on, whatever the case may be, look at what the worst case income scenario is. And then look at what they're projecting and why. How likely is it that they'll get to the projections that they're showing compared to the worst case? If you like the worst case scenario, then you're going to be happy with the product.
And sure.
You're buying it for the right reason.
Mead in Fairview, Pennsylvania. By the way, 877-PLANNER, if you've got questions, we've got another hour coming up. Mead says, I purchased a variable annuity 3 years ago with a lifetime guaranteed benefit. I was surprised to find out that even though I have a basis of about 60% pre-tax, unlike annuitization, which I would only be taxed on the 40% that was not basis, but because this is a withdrawal, it'll be earnings first. People should be advised about the tax consequences of these products. In my case, it makes a big difference. Well, let's say what he's talking about right here.
Well, we've talked about this a little bit. There is a difference in the tax treatment of the different payout methods from the different annuities.
And you have a couple of different payout methods.
The two main methods are annuitization, where you take a lump sum of cash, give it to the insurance company, and you no longer have any claim against that cash. The insurance company agrees to pay you an income for the rest of your life, for a specific term of time, for your life and your spouse's life, or something. But there's a payout. And if you live a really long time, the insurance company keeps paying. If you don't live, unfortunately, through the term, maybe the insurance company keeps the rest of the money. But that's an annuitization. There's no cash value component left. And that has a partial treatment of taxation. Some of the income that you're receiving is taxable as earnings. Some of it is a return of your own principal. So if I'm getting a $10,000 payment and I had a 40% exclusion ratio, 40% of the, or I should go the other way, a 60% exclusion ratio, 60% of the money that I'm receiving, $6,000 of that $10,000, isn't taxable. It's my own money coming back. Whereas the other $4,000 would be taxable. Compare that or contrast that with a withdrawal benefit where we have the cash value. We're earning interest or we have a variable account that's earning some, hopefully earning money on the actual cash value. And if I want to, I can cash it in and get to that cash value subject to a surrender charge in the early years. But the cash is still there. And when they start making the lifetime income payment, it's still a deferred annuity that is making a withdrawal. It is not annuitizing it. I can turn it off anytime I want too. Annuitization? No, I can't turn it off. This one I have a lot more control over, but it is a withdrawal. With a withdrawal from an annuity, all earnings come out first. So if I'm taking $10,000 out of a contract that had a 40% deferred component to it, I don't get to take any of my own principal out tax-free until I've exhausted all of the earnings in that contract.
And that's 100% taxable.
That $10,000 would be potentially 100% taxable. Instead of only four of it being taxable, 10. Now, at some point, I'm going to get to a point where I've taken out all the earnings. And now it's going to be mostly principal that's coming up. Now it favors in the other way.
That's how it works. Meade, I hope that helps you out. Hey, we got some lines open. If you need the Brain Trust off the air, you want to talk to Professor Rick Plum or any of the advisors, Chris Lloyd included, you can get in touch with them at their off-air number at Lucia Capital Group, 800-644-1150. 800-644-1150. Any questions you have, they'll be happy to help you out. Another hour just ahead, 877-PLANNER. Get on board now. It's Bucket Strategy Investing.
Information presented should not be considered specific tax, legal, or investment advice. You should always seek counsel of the appropriate advisor prior to making any investment decision. All investments are subject to risk, including the loss of principal. There is no guarantee that any investing or financial planning strategy will be profitable, provide protection from loss, or meet its stated objectives. Investment advisor representatives of Lucia Capital Group are also registered representatives of and offer securities through Lucia Securities, LLC, a registered broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. John Dean is an associated person with Lucia Securities, LLC. In the information presented, the opinions and views expressed are subject to change without notice and may not come to pass. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training.